Hey, we're back. By the way, our feedback email address is ccrecap@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. Well, Total Car Score today releasing its top 10 best high-performance cars for 2012. Taking 8 of the 10 spots are vehicles from GM, Ford, and Chrysler. To talk about why the big three did so well, I'm joined by Carl Brower, the editor-in-chief and CEO of Total Car Score. That's TotalCarScore.com. You can find them online. Carl, thanks for joining us on WYLS this evening.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Now, when you're ranking performance, what exactly are you looking at?
Well, what we wanted to do was get those cars that were kind of parsed out from the mainstream vehicles. So basically, every one of these vehicles is kind of a tuner. Some people call it like factory tuner, in-house tuning company version of the car. They're the ones that are more expensive, but because they've got more horsepower, better suspensions, usually upgraded interiors and seats. So that was kind of the starting point. You had to be one of those types of cars to even be considered.
Now, look, the interesting thing is that at the top of the list is the Infiniti IPLG Coupe, which is a Nissan-made vehicle, right?
Right.
And now, other than that, Toyota, Honda, Hyundai, none of these other Japanese manufacturers are on the list. What is it about the Infiniti that made it so special, and why didn't the other Japanese automakers make it on the list also?
You know, there's just not the same, I think, dedication to a performance version of a mainstream vehicle from a lot of the other makers. Infiniti has always taken a very serious approach, particularly in the last 10 years, to this kind of thing. Even the mainstream Infiniti G, you know, the G35, the G37 is the new one, that has always been probably one of the best BMW alternatives out there in terms of steering, feel, and handling. I've got one in my driveway right now, so it's a perfect question. Mm-hmm. But then the performance version of that car, which is the IPLG, again, raises that bar even further and does it more effectively than really anything that right now, at least, someone like Acura or Toyota or Lexus has to offer.
Did you get to drive all 10 of these vehicles yourself?
I've driven most of them, yes. I have experienced most of these vehicles at some point in the last year or so. And, you know, you can tell that these companies are very serious. They realize you don't even want to try to play in this game unless you can cover your bases. You're just going to get laughed at by the enthusiast publications and even by the customers. They're going to see right through it. So these cars are all very serious.
Now, the Mercedes came in second, but the Cadillac CTS-V, which is made right here in Lansing, was ranked third. What made the Cadillac CTS stand out?
You know, that car is amazing because it's got a style and a kind of a visual impact that has held up really well, continues to get a lot of looks, even on the mainstream CTS. But the V has a crazy horsepower. You know, it's got a over 550 horsepower engine, and it's got, again, a very capable suspension, a very advanced suspension that they offer on that vehicle. It's the same one that some of the exotic car companies are using, this magnetic kind of one. And then, of course, it's really cool that it comes in three body styles. The fact that you can get this in not only a coupe, but a wagon format is very cool.
I'm talking to Carl Brower. He's the editor-in-chief and CEO of Total Car Score. It's TotalCarScore.com. Now, the Camaro and Corvette came in 8th and 9th. How did the Ford Taurus and Jeep Grand Cherokee beat them out?
You know, I think because Total Car Score, we take this kind of cross index look at the vehicle, and we get all the different sources that are out there that do some form of authoritative rating and combine them into a single number. And so I think when you take everything into account, you end up with cars like a Taurus, which is this very safe car. It gets really good scores from the crash test agencies, and it gets pretty good mileage. Plus, it's still very capable in terms of performance. I think that's where maybe it had a leg up over some of the other ones. And of course, don't forget the scoring's pretty tight, too. I mean, the Taurus is an 83. The Camaro is a 78. You know, I mean, they're all within about 5 points of each other. But I think the Taurus maybe is a little more balanced.
What about Volvo and BMW? How did they miss the mark here?
You know, I was surprised too that the M cars are certainly very capable and enjoyable cars. But when we combined all the different ratings that from across the industry, the M3 or even the M5, either one of those could have potentially been on this list. It didn't make the list. It didn't have the scores across the industry that. You know, lived up to the same level these cars were coming in at.
So when it comes to the score, how much of it has to do with the engine performance versus the styling of the car itself?
Well, because we've got 9 different sources that are reviewing them, and some of them are focused on things like dependability and reliability, long-term reliability. That's playing as much of a role as, say, pure performance or capability. And again, like I said, safety is in there as well, too. So that's why, you know, to get a good total car score, you can't just be the fastest or handle the best. Those are important, obviously, especially in cars like this. But I think what's great about this list is that all of these cars are just pretty solid top to bottom. There's no real weak spot or Achilles heel.
I see. And dependability, you're saying in many ways these big three made vehicles are more dependable than some of their Japanese counterparts?
Yeah, that at least in those areas, they're at least on par with the Japanese and European cars that would be scored on the same basis.
It seems that one thing that these cars share is not a very impressive MPG, 13 miles per gallon, maybe 22 at most. Is that just the price you pay for high performance, or?
It's kind of the nature of the beast, and don't forget that 13 MPG is coming from number 10, which is the Ford SVT Raptor, which is just crazy. That's a big, heavy performance truck that is, you know, frighteningly capable. It really shouldn't be able to do the things it does, but Ford's really tuned that thing to be crazy. But it's still a big truck with a lot of horsepower, and that's what you're going to do. You're going to get a bad mileage. But, you know, again, the Taurus, for instance, which is number 4, it's got 20 combined. So you're getting all that performance, and you're still getting 20 MPG combined. For a high-performance vehicle, that's pretty good.
Yeah, in June you came out with the 10 best American cars for 2012, which the Cadillac CTS was actually the very top of that list, the Chevy Traverse third. Both of these are made in Lansing. Is part of the reason why they are such good vehicles is the way they're put together, or is it just simply the way they're designed?
I think it's a lot of that. I think that I think another thing is the staying power. That's what's impressive about the top 10 American cars list we did is that none of those cars were brand new. None of them are flashes in the pan. These are all cars that have been out for a couple years or more. And the fact that they hold up on these cross-industry ratings from the total car score is solid across the industry, and that's why they end up on these lists, shows that these are solid cars that these manufacturers got right the first time out. They don't have to redesign the car every couple years, because these cars haven't been redesigned in the last couple of years. They're all relatively new, and yet they're all holding up well.
And what do you, when you look at the future of the car industry, obviously there's been a bit of a comeback now. Do you have concerns in terms of the industry itself as to what may occur if, as we're seeing the economy start sputtering potentially here?
You know what the good thing is that we've been through recently, and it was terrible and painful at the time, but the bottom line is that we don't have the kind of overcapacity that we suffered from in this country for so long, where we basically had to push the cars out the door. The manufacturers had to keep selling these cars to justify all these plants that had to keep producing them. And because we aren't set up like that, now these car companies can be profitable and maintain their financial health at lower sales volumes. And that actually kind of, you know, inoculates them from future economic disruption. And I think that's what they realized in this last go-around with the economic turmoil we had, is that they had to stop being, risky there. They need to stop having that kind of potential tragedy happen when the economy slid. And they did. They got themselves set up so they're much more capable of weathering economic storms.
Well, it seems now, though, the focus is selling to China. Are these vehicles, these kind of high-performance vehicles, likely to be big hits over there?
They actually are. You know, one of the things that's interesting about China is that it's a totally different market. I had a Mercedes-Benz guy tell me the difference between an S-Class buyer, which is their top-line sedan, in the U.S. versus China is about 40 years. You know, the S-Class buyers here are 60 or 70, and the S-Class buyers in China are 20 or 30. So it's a totally different market over there, and they like big, powerful cars, which actually bodes very well, as I think we'd all know, for the American manufacturers.
Do they prefer, in general, American the big three versus, you know, their next door neighbors, Japanese manufactured cars?
I think they prefer whatever kind of can be easily identified by their home market as kind of conspicuous. You know, they're kind of younger to the whole booming economy thing, and so they're not worried, for instance, over there about class warfare. If you can have the biggest, most powerful, most chromed-up car on your block, that's what you want if you can afford it there. So that's what they really want.
30 seconds left. Any more lists coming out from Total Car Score?
You know, we've also got the top 10 fastest cars of 2013 on our site as well. So if you want to talk about 10 cars that can go over 200 miles per hour, if you go to TotalCarScore.com right now, you can see all those cars. A lot of Italians in that list.
Okay. Tell me the number one fastest car for 2012.
Well, it remains the Bugatti Veyron, 268 miles per hour in the Supersport version. Of course, you need about $2.5 million to buy one. But
yeah, good to know and good to imagine. Our Carl Brower, a CEO and editor-in-chief for Total Car Score online. It's TotalCarScore.com. Carl, thanks for joining us on WILS this evening.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Coming up next, we're going to talk to an MSU professor who's been studying and Priceline and so on, and he's found some interesting results. We'll break it all down next. I'm Michael Cohen, and you're listening to More Compelling Talk Radio. This is 1320 WILS.